Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Friday, October the 24th, 2014, and you are listening to Retooling for Our Coming of Age with Jeff Dunphy. My name is Jamina Ponte, and I am standing in today for Jeff as he is again conferencing this week. But not to worry, to all of you faithful Retooling listeners out there, Jeff will be back next week. In any case, I've prepared a very interesting show for you this week, so stick around. Just for your information, you can go to our website, retooling.org, for more information about this show, about Jeff, and about myself. We update our show notes each week, outlining what we talked about on the show, and pass along any clips or links that were mentioned in the show. So, today's show is about judgment. What is judgment? Why is it so prevalent in our society? And how can we use our judgment as a powerful tool to raise our consciousness? I first wanted to begin by saying that today's show is in absolutely no way coming from a place of righteousness. I'm a human being who is far from perfect, and I often catch myself judging others out of pure habit, only to realize that super divisive and really damaging. It's damaging to myself, it's damaging to other people, and it's not really helping the bigger picture of anything. And so I wanted to really explore this topic of judgment today as a means of better understanding why we use judgment from an esoteric standpoint, a psychological standpoint, and also a philosophical standpoint. With the goal of perhaps to propose a solution as to how we can use judgment as a positive human skill as opposed to a negative one. So if you just take a second to look around you, it seems like we are swimming in a sea of nonstop judgment. It's like an ocean of opinions and it's not always good. A lot of times it feels quite negative and it bleeds into different issues like self-consciousness and feeling inadequate and bullying. And this very idea of judgment and human opinion really does cause, it's like a ripple in a sea of causing a lot of things that perhaps could be avoided if we had a little bit more understanding of where it comes from and how it begins. So if you go on TV, you see that the television and the TV shows and the pundits and the reality television shows, they're all judging how someone looks, how they act, what they're doing in magazines, in newspapers, on the radio. It's so prevalent that it's culturally embedded within us, which adds to this also very natural aspect of having judgment as a human skill. And then even when you look on social media, judgment and opinions are rampant. So even if you were to shut off the TV, quit media altogether, if you were to go out with a group of friends, there's always usually someone in the group who's talking about someone else or something else in an opinionated or very judgmental manner. So whether that's politics or fashion or whatever it is, we human beings really love to judge. And I am not exempt from that statement at all whatsoever, for the record. So where does this come from? Is it human nature? Are we hardwired to judge? I wanted to start the show off with a clip by Manly P. Hall, who I mentioned in last week's show is one of my favorite philosophers, and he actually started something called the Philosophical Research Society, and I realized after the fact that I called it something completely different, and so I apologize. But if you want to learn more about the Philosophical Research Society, you can go to prs.org, and you'll find all of Manly P. Hall lectures and books that he's written. In any case, in this next clip, Manly P. Hall is speaking in a lecture about something that is known in esoteric philosophy as the dweller on the threshold. And I know for a fact that Jeff has spoken about the dweller on the threshold in previous shows. And according to esoteric philosophy, the dweller on the threshold exemplifies this part of our ego or our personality that is subconscious. And so it's this subconscious part of our own individual egos that almost mirrors qualities in ourselves that aren't always positive. They could be positive, they could be negative, it depends on the perspective of the person, but they're within us, and we don't always realize that they're there. So I'm going to play this first clip, and he's talking about this mysterious thing that we call I, and how it interacts with ourselves and with others.
What part does the human being play in his own existence? I think we must admit that he plays a very important part. All of history, all of society, all of the experiences and discoveries of knowledge are all due to something inside of the human being. Civilization is nothing but a long shadow of something inside of the person. We have something inside of ourselves that built the pyramids, wrote the sacred books, waged all the wars, created all the art, and in addition to these major achievements, perpetuated the species itself with an infinite diversity of individualities. We also find that this being in the body doesn't function the same in all bodies. There is a great individuality here. As a result of that, the living thing in each of us tangles with the living things in others and result in turn in stress, strife, discord, and hatred. How do we understand then the way in which to approach the problem of what is inside of ourselves? Actually, we cannot turn our powers of comprehension inward. We have tried it, and some claim a measure of success. But for the most part, when we turn our conscious attention to the source of our own consciousness, we are stymied. We find that instead of finding answers, we find speculations. Each individual seeking the internal part of himself ends in speculations. He is not able to actually penetrate into the machinery of his own inner life. Having no fortune in this respect, therefore, it is necessary to do what we can. And one of the things we can all do is estimate, as far as possible, our own inner lives. We can interpret the conduct of other people, but we seldom correctly interpret our own. We express our attitudes of acceptance or rejections to the thoughts of other people. But our own thoughts, we more or less drift with, going along with patterns that are often unreasonable, conflicting, contradictory, and may in some cases dangerous. So, let's see what would happen if we try to find out a little more about ourselves. I think perhaps Plato, quoted by Philo Judaeus, made an interesting statement, namely, that which goes into the mouth of the individual is a material sustenance. But the best that comes out of the mouth in the form of speech can change the course of history. Therefore, nutrition is a private business. Expression, vocally, is a public concern. Each person, whether he realizes it or not, has a subtle determination to influence other individuals. He wants his own thoughts to be accepted by those around him. Nations expect their policies to be accepted by the rest of the world. Each person, however, is contriving to communicate his own inward feelings about matters and cause these to dominate the lives of other persons. So we have this problem of trying to estimate, if we can, what this power is inside of ourselves.
So that was Manly P. Hall talking about this mysterious power that we have inside of ourselves that wants to communicate opinions, wants to communicate judgments, is a creative force, that of expression. And he goes so far as to quote Plato and even say that what we choose to put into our bodies is a private matter, but what we express is a public matter. And I find that super interesting because we do live in, if you're living in North America, a North American culture is a culture that claims to have something called freedom of speech. And at least I know, being brought up in North America, there was this idea that there was this thing called freedom of speech, and we can speak and say liberally whatever we want without consequence, and without even always thinking of the consequence of what we say to others and how that affects others, and even how it affects everyone, the larger scale. And so just keeping that in mind, that last clip, we're going to move on to another clip. And we're going to zoom out a bit. So we're going to go to the macro and even look at the idea of judgment from a more zoomed out perspective. And in this next clip, we're going to listen to a discussion on the work of Carl Jung. As you may or may not know, Carl Jung was a psychologist that profoundly changed the way we think about the mind and its relation to the body, to our actions, our dream life, and our connection with a higher source from a psychological standpoint. His work was revolutionary. And we're going to hear about something called shadow projection. So let's give it a listen.
If people observe their own unconscious tendencies in other people, this is called a projection. Political agitation in all countries is full of such projections, just as much as the backyard gossip of little groups and individuals. Projections of all kinds obscure our view of our fellow men, spoiling its objectivity, and thus spoiling all possibility of genuine human relationships. And there is an additional disadvantage in projecting our shadow. If we identify our own shadow with, say, the communists or the capitalists, a part of our own personality remains on the opposing side. The result is that we shall constantly, though involuntarily, do things behind our own backs that support this other side, and thus we shall unwittingly help our enemy. If, on the contrary, we realize the projection and can discuss matters without fear or hostility, dealing with the other person sensibly, then there is a chance of mutual understanding, or at least of a truce. Whether the shadow becomes our friend or enemy depends largely upon ourselves. The shadow is not necessarily always an opponent. In fact, he is exactly like any human being with whom one has to get along, sometimes by giving in, sometimes by resisting, sometimes by giving love, whatever the situation requires. The shadow becomes hostile only when he is ignored or misunderstood. Sometimes, though not often, an individual feels impelled to live out the worst side of his nature and to repress his better side. In such cases, the shadow appears as a positive figure in his dreams. But to a person who lives out his natural emotions and feelings, the shadow may appear as a cold and negative intellectual. It then personifies poisonous judgments and negative thoughts that have been held back. So whatever form it takes, the function of the shadow is to represent the opposite side of the ego and to easy if one could integrate the shadow into the conscious personality just by attempting to be honest and to use one's insight. But unfortunately, such an attempt does not always work. There is such a passionate drive within the shadowy part of oneself that reason may not prevail against it. A bitter experience coming from the outside may occasionally help. A brick, so to speak, has to drop on one's head to put a stop to shadow drives and impulses. At times, a heroic decision may serve to halt them. But such a superhuman effort is usually possible only if the great man within, the self, helps the individual to carry it through. The fact that the shadow contains the overwhelming power of irresistible impulse does not mean, however, that the drive should always be heroically repressed. Sometimes the shadow is powerful because the urge of the self is pointing in the same direction, and so one does not know whether it is the self or the shadow that is behind the inner pressure. In the unconscious, one is unfortunately in the same situation as in a moonlit landscape. All the contents are blurred and merge into one another, and one never knows exactly what or where anything is, or where one thing begins and ends. This is known as the contamination of unconscious contents. When Jung called one aspect of the unconscious personality the shadow, he was referring to a relatively well-defined factor. But sometimes everything that is unknown to the ego is mixed up with the shadow, including even the most valuable and highest forces. In a case when the dream itself does not make things clear, the conscious personality will have to make the decision. If the shadow figure contains valuable, vital forces, they ought to be assimilated into actual experience and not repressed. It is up to the ego to give up its pride and priggishness and to live out something that seems to be dark but actually may not be.
So, these are all very complex concepts, but let's see if we can break it down. To begin, we live in a dualistic world. So what that means is that there's a spectrum, a pendulum swing, if you will, of good and evil, or of black and white. And so most things that we see or make sense of in the world, we think of things on this dualistic spectrum. So one thing has an opposite effect. And as human beings, that our soul self, the higher part of ourself, is always trying to move us towards a middle path, so a middle place of balance in between these two dualistic points of opposites. We have our ego, which is the conscious part of our personality, your everyday regular self that makes your choices, has a certain sense of humor, has preferences and desires. And then we have our shadow self, which Manly P. Hall would call the dweller on the threshold. This is an unconscious mirror of our ego or our personality, and it has an influence on a subconscious influence on our desires and our choices. So when we see these shadow qualities in others, we are reminded of this part of ourselves. And there is this unconscious familiarity, and it spurs up some sort of passionate emotion behind that familiarity. And when that unconscious familiarity is brought to the surface of to our conscious brain, we form an opinion, and that opinion is what Carl Jung calls a projection. And so we project our shadow self, what we see in others, which is also in ourselves. And it's usually something we do not like, but often we don't recognize that this trait is also in ourselves, and we only focus on this other person or this other issue that's outside of ourselves, because to us that is real. And since we can't see that, we also embody those qualities because we're unconscious of it, we don't realize it, we only focus on the other person and what they're doing or what they're wearing or how they look and how we don't like that. So by recognizing, just by understanding this very complex concept of this other side of ourselves, a self that we don't necessarily always see or realize that it's there, by recognizing that that this exists, and by understanding how that how projection works, we're able to approach all situations a little bit differently, with more understanding instead of just instant judgment. So it helps us to, instead of just jumping into judgment, it helps us to realize that usually when we have a strong opinion or strong judgment about someone or about something else, something that someone else is doing, this is generally coming from a place inside of us, and it's being mirrored to us so that we can become conscious of our own actions and therefore change it or integrate it into ourselves, or as it said in that last clip, bring it to the surface so that it can be played out, so that it can get out of our system and move through us and be done with, in a sense. So that would be the zoomed out, very complex psychological explanation for why we judge and where it comes from and where it originates from. But we're going to zoom back in now and bring it back to earth a little bit and bring it back down to a comfortable level of understanding. So in this next clip, I'm going to play a clip by an individual called Anthony DeMello. Unfortunately, he's passed on and he's no longer with us. But he's a philosopher of sorts, and he is also an author, and he wrote a book called Awareness, which is one of the best books I have ever read. And whenever anyone asks me to recommend a book to them, I always recommend this book. It definitely taught me how to understand the concept of attachment and the concept of detachment, which are two Buddhist concepts which help us to understand a bit more of why we hold on to things, or and why we allow things to kind of haunt us. So he has an amazing way of speaking, and I just love his ideas and how he puts forth very complex ideas. And I'm going to play this next clip. And in the clip, he's talking about the I in the statement I am. So when I say I am pretty, I am nice, I am awesome, he's talking about how we use this label and how using this label affects our reality from a more spiritual standpoint.
Now, the important thing is not, listen to this sentence carefully, the important thing is not to know who I is or what I is. You'll never succeed. There are no words for this. The important thing is to drop the labels. As the Japanese masters, the Zen masters say, don't seek for truth. Only drop your opinions. Drop your theories. Don't seek for truth. Truth isn't something you seek for. If you would stop being opinionated, you would know. If you would drop your beliefs and opinions, you would know. Now, something similar happens here. If you would drop your labels, you would know. What do I mean by labels? Every label you can conceive of, except perhaps human being. I am a human being, fair enough. Doesn't say very much. But when you say, I am successful, that's crazy, because success is not part of the I. Success is something that comes and goes. It could be here today and gone tomorrow. That's not I. But you said, I am a success. That's where you were in error. That's when you got plunged into darkness. You identified yourself with success. I am a failure. I am a lawyer. I am a businessman. Now, you know what's going to happen to you if you identify identify yourself with these things, you're going to cling to them, you're going to be worried that they may fall apart. And that's where all your suffering comes in. That's what I meant in the beginning when I said to you, if you're suffering, you're asleep. Do you want a sign that you're asleep? Here it is. You're suffering. You're asleep. Suffering is a sign that you're out of touch with the truth. Suffering is given to you that you might open your eyes to the truth, that you might understand that there is some falsehood somewhere. Just as physical pain is given to you to understand that there's a disease, there's an illness somewhere. So suffering points out that there's some falsehood somewhere. Suffering occurs when you clash with reality. When your illusion clashes with reality. When your falsehood clashes with truth, then you have suffering. Otherwise, there is no suffering.
So I thought that this clip talking about labels was apropos because so often we as human beings get attached to these ideas of what we are and how we are, these ideas of what defines us. And I think that what Anthony DeMello is saying in this clip is that this I am, when you say the words I am and when you describe yourself as I am, just those two words in itself, if you were to associate those two words with your higher self or your soul, then you would know that the soul is not a bus driver. The soul is not a success on the human plane. The soul is not a model or an astronaut. The soul is far above that. The soul is a much higher vibrating form of energy that is only working to try to come into this vehicle that we call the human body. And so we are, in a sense, tricking ourselves when we say things like, I am this or I am that, and using these two words that describe a much higher part of ourselves to describe lower material, physical things that only happen in our human world. And he puts forth a very interesting concept of our attachment to these titles and these labels, and how by letting them go, then we will be more open to knowing a higher part of ourselves and who we really are. So I wanted to sum something, everything up with a solution of sorts. And I wanted to say that I don't think judgment is a bad thing. And in other words, I think it would be really hypocritical for me to judge people for being judgmental. Instead, I think that judgment is a natural thing and it is an important element of being human. So for example, having good judgment allows us to make good decisions for our lives. Having discrimination helps us to weed out that which is true and good from that which is false manipulation. And if you study the principles of duality, you will know that the primary difference between good and evil is intention. If you intend to help, to empower, then it's good. You're on the path of light. You're on the path of good. If you intend or your intention is to manipulate, to dominate, to control, to force your opinion, then it is on the path of evil. It's on the path of darkness. And so those would be the two opposites on this pendulum swing, on this spectrum that I was speaking about in this world of duality that we live in. And if we apply this concept to judgment, then we can start to use judgment as a tool for good. If we recognize that when we have strong reaction to someone or something, then we are being shown something in ourselves that we can't see necessarily, and we don't like it. It doesn't make us feel good. It gives us a bad feeling because perhaps we've had a previous life experience with that sort of behavior. And we'll know that we can try to understand how that is also in ourselves, and we can try to approach the actions and deeds of others with more understanding as opposed to vitriol. As we learned on last week's show, our thoughts, both negative and positive, really matter. I talked about Dr. Emoto and his work with water crystals, using human thoughts on the water and how it affected the crystals. And then we extrapolated that and applied it to how our thoughts affect our bodies and affect the bodies of other living things, considering that we're all made of water. Our thoughts create, they affect others, and they affect us. So if we can learn to eliminate some of our negative judgments of ourselves, which is super important, and also of others, then we can make room in our minds and our hearts for things that are more awesome, more important, more evolutionary, or as Kid President would say, gooder. I wanted to end today's show with a clip from a young kid who goes by the name of Kid President and posts regular videos on YouTube. I think he's a really great example of how someone who is spreading positivity out in the world, and he's just a little kid. This last clip is called Pep Talk by Kid President, and I hope it will just zoom you right into your regular everyday life and into your body and into what you're doing right now, and how what you're doing and how what you're thinking and how what you're saying and how you're treating other people is affecting the bigger picture, just starting with yourself. And I hope it will inspire you to think about your thoughts, your opinions, your judgments, and just start to begin to have some more understanding of where they come from and how they can be used to make the world more awesome. So I want to thank you for allowing me to be of service. As always, you can please visit our website at retooling.org for all of the links I used on today's shows, all of the clips. And I will leave you with the wise words of the 11-year-old Kid President.
I think we all need pep talks. The world needs to stop being boring. Yeah, you. Boring is easy. Everybody can be boring, but you're good at that. Life is not a game, people. Life isn't a cereal either. Well, it is a cereal. And if life is a game, are we on the same team? I mean, really, right? I'm on your team, you're my team. This is nice, people. You got air coming through your nose. Your heartbeat. That means it's time to do something. A poem. Two roads diverged in the woods, and I took the road less traveled.
It hurt, man!
Really bad. Rocks, thorns, and grass. My parents broke.
Wah!
Not cool, Robert Frost. But well, they weren't too bad. I won't be in the ones that leads to awesome. Like that dude Journey said, don't stop believing. Unless you dream stupid. And you should get a better dream. I think that's how it goes. Get a better dream and keep going. Keep going, keep going, and keep going. What Michael Jordan have quit? Well, he did quit, so he retired. Yeah, he retired. But before that, in high school, what if he quit when he didn't make the team? He would have never made Space Jam. And I love Space Jam. What will be your Space Jam? What will you create will make the world awesome? Nothing if you keep sitting there. That's why I'm talking to you today. This is your time. This is my time. It's our time. We can make every day better for each other. If we're all on the same team, let's start acting like it. We got work to do. We can cry about it, or we can dance about it. You were made to be awesome. Let's get out there! I don't know everything, I'm just a kid. But I do know this. Everybody do the gift of the world, and the gift of faith. get to it. Awesome. Bye-bye.